Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 19th. The family of Billy Felsinger will host a gathering of family and friends from 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. on Friday, January 20th, at Lake Ridge Chapel and Memorial Designers in Lubbock. A service to celebrate his life of 88 years is scheduled at 10 a.m. on Saturday, January 21st, at Kelview Heights Baptist Church in Midland, followed by a graveside service at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. He died on Saturday, January 14th, in Lubbock. Please visit www.memorialdesigners.net for a service broadcasting schedule, floral purchasing, and an area to share stories of Mr. or Mrs. Felsinger with his family. Billy Ray Felsinger was born December 31st, 1934, to Paul and Sophrona Davis Felsinger in Page, Oklahoma. He married Gloria Blake on August 16, 1963, at the home of Pauline and James Roberson in Seminole, Texas. They lived in Midland, and Billy worked for Drillco. Following his job at Drillco, he drove a school bus for many years, all while running a cleaning business on the side. Billy joined Kelview Heights Baptist Church in 1970 and was an active member. His main ministry was the bus ministry, where he drove the children to church on Sundays and drove the bus to minister to them every Saturday. 2 years ago, he moved to Lubbock to be closer to his daughter and family. Mr. Felsinger is survived by his children, Tanya Lawrence, Danny Felsinger, and Pam McKinney, as well as several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. He is also survived by sisters Rose Watson and Pauline Roberson. He is preceded in death by his parents, Paul and Sophrona Felsinger, wife Gloria Felsinger, son David Felsinger, and brother-in-law James Roberson. Linda Merrill Sellers Curtis, age 65, of Big Spring, passed away on January 14th. She was born March 2, 1957, in Beaumont, Texas, to Roger William Merrill Sr. and Florence Royston Merrill. Linda was a beloved wife, mother, grandmother, sister, and aunt, while enjoying a long and successful career in the field of electrical instrumentation and design. She was as well known and highly respected in her line of work as she was a family person who lived and loved life to the fullest. Linda was largely self-taught at work, having started at 18 years old with Fluor Engineering in Houston. She continued working for 48 more years while raising a large and blended loving family. Linda is survived by her husband Bruce Curtis Sr., and her seven remaining children, Jay, Christina, Eric, Amanda, William, Aaron, and Noah, her sister, Anita Condren Tynert, and her many grandchildren, nieces, and nephews. She is preceded in death by her parents, Roger Merrill and Florence Merrill, her brother, Roger William Merrill Jr., her daughters, Mary Catherine and Shannon, and grandson Adrian. Viewing will be held in Midland, Texas on Friday, January 20th at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., family visitation at 6 p.m., and funeral services will be held at the adjoining chapel on Saturday, January 21st at 10 a.m. In lieu of flowers, please consider a donation to the family for significant financial expenses incurred. Contributions may be made to @LindaS123. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pepkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pepkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapepkinfh.com. William A. Bill Rapp was born September 10, 1927 in El Paso, Texas, to John and Carrie Rapp, and passed to his heavenly home on January 15, 2023, with his bride of 52 years at his side. He graduated from El Paso High School, where he was student class president, colonel of the JROTC, and competed in pole vaulting and broad jumping events. He was always a patriot and proudly served in all three military branches. He voluntarily joined the Navy with a group of his friends right out of high school in 1945, before accepting an appointment to the United States Military Academy at West Point in 1946. He graduated from West Point as a second lieutenant in 1950 and ranked 188 in a class of 767 students. Bill qualified to enter flight school in the Army Air Corps at Goodfellow Airfield in San Angelo, Texas, before it branched into the Air Force. He served in the Air Force from 1950 to 1959. Civilian life after 1960 found Bill several careers, including civil engineer with West Texas Consultants, motor and pump division of Alice Chalmers, and restaurateur at the Branding Iron Restaurant from 1969 to 1979. He married the love of his life, Brenda, in 1970. Bill was preceded in death by his parents, John and Carrie Rapp, siblings John A. Rapp and Martha Franklin, and grandson Tommy Rasmussen Jr. He is survived by his wife of 52 years, Brenda Rapp, four daughters, Samantha Pierce, Courtney Rapp, Tammy Rasmussen, and Lanny Zimkowski. He is also survived by six grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations be made in Bill's memory to a military charity of your choice, such as Wounded Warrior Project, Hunt for Heroes, or Real Thanks. Visitation to be held at Ellis Funeral Home on Thursday the 19th from 5 to 8 p.m. Funeral service at Ellis Funeral Home will take place on January 20th at 2 p.m. at 4616 North Big Spring Street in Midland, 79705. David Warren, age 74 of Midland, passed away January 16th. The family will receive guests from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, January 28th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, January 18th, 2023. Stop smoking. Beat the stress of New Year's resolutions. Reduce or quit smoking with the help of the Pivot Smart Sensor, proven to reduce cigarettes smoked and increase motivation. Pivot Smart Sensor measures carbon monoxide in your breath, allowing you to visualize and track your results. Measure daily improvements and see the impact of changes you make in real time. Simply skip a cigarette or delay your next one and watch your carbon monoxide levels drop. Pivot's personalized and non-judgmental approach works for all forms of tobacco, including e-cigarettes, cigars, and smokeless tobacco. The Pivot program is also made up of a personalized app experience, free supply of nicotine replacement therapy, NRT, unlimited access to coaching via private in-app chat, access to a robust peer-based community. What do real Pivot members have to say? Quote, just cutting back or delaying a little that first day and seeing lower CO levels was a real insight into the amount of toxins going into my body. I was so proud of myself, and the challenge to do even better was on, end quote. Katie. Quote, the pivot sensor made a big difference for me. As I continued to see my goals manifest on that gadget, it gave me confidence that I was progressing. End quote. Jason. Get started today at pivot.com/LMC. Mayo Clinic Q&A. What is cervical cancer? Dear Mayo Clinic, since age 20, I have had annual visits with a gynecologist. I am now in my late 30s, and my physician recommended that I get an HPV test in addition to a Pap test to check for cervical cancer. What is the importance of both, and what is my risk of cervical cancer? Answer. Screening for cervical cancer can cause a lot of confusion because guidelines and tests have evolved over the years. A Pap test is an important screening exam that's used to check for abnormal cells on the cervix that could indicate early-stage cervical cancer or precancerous cells. The test for human papillomavirus, or HPV, also is important because if you have that virus, it raises your risk for developing cervical cancer. Knowing if you have HPV or not can inform and direct your healthcare in the future. Cervical cancer occurs in the lower part of the uterus known as the cervix, which connects the uterus to the vagina. The most common types of cervical cancer are squamous cell carcinoma, occurring in squamous cells which line the outer part of the cervix, and adenocarcinoma, which develops in glandular cells in the cervical canal. Anyone with a cervix is at risk of developing cervical cancer. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, more than 13,000 new cases of cervical cancer are diagnosed each year in the U.S. Hispanic women have the highest rates of developing the disease, while African American women are at greatest risk of dying from this cancer. Additional risk factors for cervical cancer include multiple sexual partners, sexual activity at a young age, sexually transmitted infections, weakened immune system, smoking. Numerous strains of HPV infection play a role in causing almost all cervical cancer. Many women's immune systems combat HPV, preventing the virus from causing cancer. However, some women are more susceptible to cervical cancer as HPV lives in their bodies for years and aids in the emergence of cancer cells. Historically, women often have visited with a gynecologist or other health specialist annually to have a Pap test, which involves collecting and examining cells from the cervix. If the test finds abnormal cells, additional tests to look further for precancerous or cancerous cells may be recommended. More recently, HPV testing has been recommended for women, along with the Pap exam, as it can provide useful information about a person's risk for cervical cancer. This is particularly important since most women will not experience any signs of cervical cancer in early stages. An HPV test can be done at the same time as a Pap test and uses the same cell sample collected for the Pap test. The HPV test doesn't tell you whether you have cancer. Instead, it detects the presence of HPV in your body. If you have HPV, particularly the two common subtypes that are most closely linked to cervical cancer, then you are at higher risk for developing cervical cancer. Knowing that, you and your healthcare team can decide how often you need Pap tests and other tests to monitor your condition going forward. Not all types of HPV increase the risk of cervical cancer, and if you are found to have an HPV infection, it is important to note that it does not mean you will develop cervical cancer. The HPV vaccine protects against the types of HPV that are most likely to cause cervical cancer. The vaccine works better when given to girls starting at age 9, but it has now been approved for women up to 45. Depending upon your risk factors, if you have not previously received the vaccine, it may be valuable for you. How often you need a Pap test and an HPV test depends on your individual situation. In general, the recommendation is to have both tests done every 5 years for women older than 30 who haven't had an abnormal Pap test in the past. That may shift, however, depending on your medical history, as well as other health issues you may have. Talk with your healthcare team about the schedule that's best for you. Mayo Clinic Healthcare Expert. Why reflux disease isn't just heartburn. London. Gastroesophageal reflux disease is one of the most common digestive disorders in the world. It happens when acid comes up from the stomach into the esophagus. The stomach can resist acid, but the esophagus is less acid resistant. James East, MD, a gastroenterologist at Mayo Clinic Healthcare in London, says reflux disease may be common, but there can be severe complications if it is ongoing and left untreated. Heartburn is a key symptom of reflux disease. But the disease is much more than that. Quote, gastroesophageal reflux disease is when you get acid and chemical damage to the lining of the esophagus, end quote, Dr. East says. Some with reflux disease might feel a lump in the throat, have difficulty swallowing, have chest pain, a cough, or have worsening asthma-type symptoms. Quote, complications of reflux disease include esophagitis, inflammation in the bottom of the esophagus, end quote, Dr. East says. Quote, if this is persistent, you can develop scarring and a stricture, end quote, or narrowing of the esophagus. If it is persistent and heals, the lining of the esophagus can change to a more acid-resistant form, known as Barrett's esophagus, a fairly common complication of reflux disease, Dr. East says. Barrett's esophagus is a condition in which the lining esophagus becomes damaged by acid reflux, which causes the lining to thicken and become red. Over time, the valve between the esophagus and the stomach may begin to fail, leading to acid and chemical damage of the esophagus. In some people, reflux disease may trigger a change in the cells that line the lower esophagus, causing Barrett's esophagus. While frequent heartburn may be a sign, many people with Barrett's esophagus have no symptoms. Having Barrett's esophagus does increase your risk of developing esophageal cancer. Although the cancer risk is small, it's important for people with Barrett's esophagus to have regular checkups to check for precancerous cells. Those at highest risk for Barrett's esophagus include white men over the age of 50, people with family history of Barrett's esophagus or esophageal cancer, people who smoke, people with excess abdominal fat, patients with long-standing reflux lasting more than 5 years. Quote, if you have three of those factors, then you should have a screening endoscopy for Barrett's esophagus, end quote, Dr. East says. To screen for Barrett's esophagus, a lighted tube with a camera at the end called an endoscope is passed down the throat to check for signs of changing esophagus tissue. A biopsy is often done to remove tissue and confirm the diagnosis. Treatment for Barrett's esophagus depends on the extent of abnormal cell growth in your esophagus and your overall health. Treatments in the early stages can include lifestyle measures and medications to help reduce acid reflux and therefore the esophageal acid exposure. Barrett's esophagus affects 10% to 15% of people with reflux disease, Dr. East says. A much smaller group faces another risk. Quote, about 1 in 200 patients with Barrett's esophagus per year will develop esophageal adenocarcinoma, end quote, Dr. East says. Quote, the stomach is well designed to handle highly acidic conditions, but the esophagus is not designed to cope with acid. And so when acid comes up, that acid reflux damages the cells, replacing them with more acid-resistant cells that develop into Barrett's esophagus, end quote. There are innovative treatments for reflux disease and medications, like proton pump inhibitors. But first, avoid triggers like coffee, alcohol, and smoking. Quote, if you have severe or frequent reflux disease, you should seek medical advice, end quote, Dr. East says. Mayo Clinic Minute, the power of willpower in weight loss. What does it take to make meaningful, lasting lifestyle changes? Some may argue it takes a fair amount of willpower to develop new habits, but a person can't rely on willpower alone. In this Mayo Clinic Minute, Dr. Donald Hensrud, a Mayo Clinic physician specializing in nutrition and editor of, quote, the Mayo Clinic Diet, end quote, offers strategies that can help people achieve their weight loss goals. What is willpower? Merriam-Webster defines it as the ability to control one's own actions, emotions, or urges. When it comes to pushing away the potato chips and picking up the walking pace, it's easier said than done. Dr. Donald Hensrud often hears from patients that they don't have the willpower to undertake weight management. Quote, I think everybody has willpower. It's not a matter of willpower. There are powerful forces causing us to eat more and to do less activity, end quote, says Dr. Hensrud. It's a matter of coming up with strategies to deal with challenges. Quote, and these strategies need to be practical, realistic, and enjoyable enough to be sustainable. We don't just not eat. We have to eat. Nobody has perfect habits, end quote. He says coming up with strategies to eat healthy, low-calorie, nutrient-dense foods can be a way to game the system and not just rely on willpower. Quote, that usually doesn't work in the long term. It's a matter of changing habits and coming up with new lifestyle changes that will fit the bill and help us manage our weight as we move along, end quote. 4 ways to reduce the risks of cervical cancer. HPV plays a role in causing most cervical cancer. Cervical cancer occurs in the cells of the cervix, the lower part of the uterus that connects to the vagina. While it isn't clear what sparks the cervical cells to change their DNA, it is certain that HPV plays a role, end quote, says Christina Butler, MD, a Mayo Clinic gynecological oncologist. HPV is the most common sexually transmitted infection in the U.S. Quote, over 85% of the general population has been exposed, end quote, says Dr. Butler. Quote, most people with HPV never develop cervical cancer, end quote. Screening tests and the HPV vaccine can help prevent cervical cancer from developing. Quote, cervical cancer rates in the U.S. have dropped dramatically, thanks to pap smears and HPV testing, end quote, says Paul McTbay, MD, a Mayo Clinic gynecologic oncologist. If you have a cervix, here's what you can do to reduce your risk of developing cervical cancer. 1. Talk to your healthcare professional about the HPV vaccine. The HPV vaccine offers the most protection when given before a person becomes sexually active. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends the HPV vaccine for routine vaccination at age 11 or 12 and everyone through age 26 who was not previously vaccinated. Adults 27 to 45 who are not vaccinated should discuss the HPV vaccine with their healthcare professional. Quote, the HPV vaccination can now be given to all adults up to age 45, end quote, says Dr. Butler. 2. Get routine screening as recommended by your healthcare professional. Screening tests can help detect cervical cancer and precancerous cells that may one day develop into cervical cancer. Screening tests include Pap test. A Pap test, or Pap smear, is usually done in conjunction with a pelvic exam. During a Pap test, your healthcare professional scrapes and brushes cells from your cervix, which are both examined in the lab, for abnormalities. A Pap test can detect abnormal cells in the cervix, including cancer cells and cells that show changes that increase the risk of cervical cancer. Healthcare professionals generally recommend beginning Pap tests at age 21 and repeating them every 3 to 5 years for women 21 to 65. HPV DNA test. In women older than 30, the Pap test may be combined with the HPV DNA test, which involves testing cells collected from the cervix for infection with any of the types of HPV that are most likely to lead to cervical cancer. Talk to your healthcare professional about the screening tests and schedule that are best for you. 3. Practice safe sex. Quote, HPV is spread by skin-to-skin contact, often during sexual encounters, end quote, says Dr. Butler. Having sex at an early age increases your risk of HPV, and the more sexual partners you have, the more likely you are to contract HPV. Having sex with a partner who has had multiple sex partners also increases your risk. 4. Don't smoke or plan to quit smoking. According to the American Cancer Society, people who smoke are more likely to get cervical cancer than those who don't. Researchers believe tobacco byproducts, which have been found in the cervical mucus of smokers, may damage the DNA of cervix cells, which can contribute to the development of cervical cancer. Smoking also weakens the immune system's ability to fight off infections, including HPV.
Intercession weeks are not part of the two drafts of the 23-24 school calendar that Midland ISD has presented online. Both calendars show the school year starting during the second week of August, ending before Memorial Day in May of 2024, and including teacher professional development days after the school year begins. However, it appears Midland ISD is done with the intersessional calendar, which provided full weeks for struggling students to receive intervention for reading. The intersessional calendar had its critics, including those on the board, who stated it shortened the summer, created childcare issues, and did not provide teacher development days. There also were issues with the percentage of students expected to come to intercession that showed up and lack of data on how effective intercession was. Former Superintendent Angelica Ramsey's departure was likely the death knell to the intercessional calendar. While Ramsey supported intercession, based on her previous experiences, it was apparent when new Superintendent Stephanie Howard was hired in December that MISD leadership would look at alternatives. So far, MISD is promoting two drafts. Both provide a week for Thanksgiving and spring break and a Christmas break with more than 2 weeks for students. One draft shows the 23-24 school year beginning August 9th, while the other starts August 10th. Both calendars also call for teachers to return after August 1st. Both calendars also show a last day of school on May 24th. Lastly, there are going to be opportunities for 3- and 4-day weekends for students with the drafts currently online. Drafts 1 and 2 both provide 4-day weekends for students in September and October, a potential 4-day weekend around Easter because of a bad weather day, guaranteed 3-day weekends in January and February, and a potential early start to spring break in March because of a bad weather day. Between September and April, there is not a month on these drafts that students don't have the potential for at least 1 day off.
Faith Over Fear. Krista Escamilla, news anchor at News West 9, was featured speaker at the Uptown Midland Business and Professional Women's BPW January Luncheon held at the Petroleum Club of Midland. Her speech was entitled Faith Over Fear, and she offered 5 tips for public speaking. Pictured are, from left, Annette Dozier, BPW Vice President, Misty Stewart, BPW President, and Escamilla. Visit www.midlandbpw.com for information about BPW membership, upcoming program lunches, meetings, and fundraisers.
Mammogram after vaccination. Dear Dr. Roach, I recently had a COVID booster, not even considering that the vaccine might impact my annual mammogram. I had my mammogram done the day after my vaccination. I had no ill effects from the vaccine. I was not advised against having the mammogram so soon after the vaccine because of a concern with my lymph nodes, dense breast tissue, and a possible cyst. I was then scheduled for an ultrasound and follow-up mammogram, another ultrasound 2 months later, and then another ultrasound on my left auxiliary lymph nodes in 6 months. Due to weight loss over the past 18 months or so, when I complete a self-exam, I only feel my ribs. I lost my 24-year-old son to liver disease in May 2021 and my husband to stomach cancer in June 2022. It's been a very difficult couple of years. I am an otherwise healthy 64-year-old woman. Recent blood work, complete blood count are all fine. There is a familiar history of breast cancer, maternal aunt, and 2 cousins. Should I have waited for the mammogram? DM. Answer. I'm sorry things have been so hard for you recently. It is true that the COVID vaccine stimulates the immune system, causing some women to get enlarged lymph nodes that can be seen for weeks and sometimes months after vaccination. Most experts now recommend against a delay in mammogram following vaccination. Although it is helpful for the radiologist interpreting the mammogram to know about vaccinations, some women may be developing breast cancer at the time they get the vaccination, and a delay could increase the risk of the cancer spreading. If there are no other abnormal findings besides enlarged lymph nodes after the vaccine, no additional studies are normally recommended. Those women who end up having cancer had other abnormalities that made the radiologists concerned. While I hope everything is okay with your results, I think given your family history and recent weight loss, it ended up being the right choice not to delay the mammogram.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 19th. Friend feels abandoned at worst possible time. Dear Abby, the last 2 years have been especially tough. I went through a breakup after a 4-year relationship. My dog developed cancer and I had to put her to sleep. And I caught COVID and have been dealing with long-haul symptoms ever since. My energy is low because of it. Plus, I've been depressed with all the events that have happened. I have 2 best friends I've known since I was 16. I'm 34 now. I thought they would be there for me through anything. We were close until recently. They no longer invite me to get-togethers, and they hang out and exclude me. I tried to stay in contact, but when I talk with them, it doesn't progress from small talk. The few times I have seen them, I stayed positive and didn't discuss my problems. They have children, and I am single and childless, which may have caused the divide between us. Being excluded hurts. When I mention it, they say, "You don't have kids. I didn't think you'd want to come." It feels like a slap in the face. I need my friends more than ever right now because I feel very alone through one of the toughest times of my life. How do I mend these friendships? Am I unreasonable for being upset? Signed, Disappointed Friend in Virginia. Dear friend, discuss your feelings with your friends. They may not be trying to isolate you intentionally. You are in very different phases of your lives right now. They may sincerely believe that being invited to kids' parties would bore you, as would their constant chatter about what their precious little ones are doing, saying, etc. This may seem like blasphemy, but more than a few childless adults feel this way. If you explain that you need their emotional support after everything you have been through, they may step forward. Recognize that your friends with kids are a package deal. If you bond with their kids, it might bring you all closer. However, if that doesn't happen, you will have to summon the energy to find new friends whose lives better align with yours. Dear Abby, I bought my roommate the most beautiful pair of earrings for her birthday. It has been more than a month, and she still hasn't worn them, not even when I once suggested it, although she has frequently worn a second pair of earrings I previously bought her. I don't have pierced ears, but the earrings in question could be made into an adorable necklace. I think if she doesn't want them, it would be nice for me to get them back since they were expensive and I like them so much myself. How can I politely ask if she plans on ever wearing them, and if not, if I can have them back? Or would it work better if I suggest that we can each get one earring made into a necklace so that we can match? Signed, Bejeweled in North Carolina. Dear Bejeweled, ask your roommate to tell you honestly if she likes the earrings you gave her. Tell her that if she doesn't, you do like them very much and would be glad to gift her something else of her choosing. Then suggest that she might return the earrings to you so you can use them to make matching necklaces. I don't think it would be rude, and neither should she.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.